You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Caution is different from panic.
Yes.
People are going a little bit insane.
Yes.
But, and then they ignore the flip side of the equation. Like China, starting around mid-February, cases started to peak. And now, as you mentioned in your email, there's hardly any new cases, so they closed down the last of their specially built hospitals that were made just for coronavirus. People seem to be ignoring the fact that a pandemic does come to a natural ending, and in the middle of that is the peak where the number of cases per day stop moving up exponentially and start to actually level off or go down.
Yeah, and the challenge, and I think we all have to remember this, is that the news media, unfortunately, thrives on fear. Right, and I'm just saying, just for everybody to get this realization that the news media's job is to deliver your eyeballs to their advertisers. That's how they make their money. And when we are in a period of absolute fear and shock and awe during wartime, during pandemic time, during all these things, people are glued to the news. I just think the level of fear is off the charts.
Right, so it's a good point because all the evidence suggests there's going to be an end to this, and it's not going to be as bad as people think. But on the economy, businesses up and down the chain are going to go out of business in just a month. If there's a month of the entire world being locked down, essentially most restaurants, bars, retail stores, and many other businesses that depend on supply chain management are just going to die.
Yep.
What's on the other side of this, optimistically, in your view? What have you been thinking about? My health is really important to me. I know I'm more creative when I'm healthy. I know I'm more energetic. And look, Athletic Greens takes your nutrition seriously, which is something we all should do all of the time. Athletic Greens has been a sponsor for so many years, and I really can't thank them enough, specifically because they make a product that I personally love using to support my immune system and my gut health. I really want to stress that Athletic Greens is not your average supplement. It's a high-quality product taken by renowned experts, including myself, as a way to get access to micronutrients and support gut health. And their research is impeccable and goes above and beyond anything else I've seen. You'll get high-quality doses of zinc citrate, vitamin C, plus all sorts of prebiotics and probiotics, which is great because they provide effective immune system support and improve your gut health. And it's not me just saying this. It's, again, check out Peter Diamandis' testimony. Tim Ferriss is the one that introduced me to the product. They really go above and beyond to help you take care of you, which is why I love taking Athletic Greens every single day. I do not miss a day. And it's why I love having them as a sponsor, because I want all of you to be well and get this immune support that I've been getting daily for years. Like, I'm amazed at how Athletic Greens has become a part of my life. I feel such a big difference in my energy, and the taste itself, I love it. It doesn't taste like some fake chocolate or fake candy flavor supplements you see everywhere else. This tastes natural because the ingredients come from natural whole foods. And I should mention, it also has adaptogens and stress and hormone support. And we all know, as stress goes up, it's important to be on our own team and get wellness where we can. This is critical. Stress is to be avoided. So go ahead and check out their website. But can't thank you enough for supporting them as they support us to support you. It's a giant virtuous circle. So thank you. We're all supporting each other. And this makes me feel so good that we're building this community and that I get to share all these different opportunities and guests and so on with you. So because they're a direct sponsor, I was able to cut a deal with them that's going to help you. It's a great deal. If you're a James Altucher Show listener, you can get an extra 20 serving pack for free. It's a $79 value with your first purchase. But you got to go to the exact URL. It's athleticgreens.com/James and claim your special offer today. That's athleticgreens.com/James. It's in the US, Canada, UK, and EU. Take your nutrition to the next level. Try Athletic Greens today. Remember, use the URL. Don't be an idiot and just go to athleticgreens.com. Then you won't get the special James Altucher Show treatment. So that's athleticgreens.com/James to get started. And now here's the show. So excited to have Peter Diamandis once again on the podcast. Peter, welcome.
James, good morning, good afternoon.
So the reason I wanted to have this is you sent around, first off, I'll just, by way of intro, you're author of the excellent books, several excellent books. We just had you on for The Future is Faster Than You Think, about all of these technologies that are growing exponentially that are going to change our lives, again, faster than we can even imagine possible. You also wrote Bold, and one of my favorite all-time books, Abundance. That's how I first became acquainted with you, is just about when everybody is sort of naysaying and doom and gloom. You talk about all of these trends in society that are incredibly abundant that we tend to ignore for all of these psychological reasons. And I think that's coming into play with our kind of global discussion about this pandemic and coronavirus. So you sent around this email yesterday, which I've seen references to these topics in other places, and some people were even arguing it was fake news, some of these items, but you then provided sources to each one. But it was basically good news, some good news about coronavirus. And I kind of just wanted to go down those and then maybe discuss even new developments since yesterday, because things are changing every day.
They are. And part of my goal is, during times that are difficult, to give people hope, because we're actually having two pandemics going on right now. The coronavirus, we also have a pandemic of fear going on, which doesn't help. It destroys economies. It destroys people's savings. It destroys people's immune systems from having just the stress levels and cortisol levels up.
Yeah, and I wrote about this about a month or so ago, called in an article called The Panic is the Virus. And you have to ask, given the math that we've been seeing in every country, you have to ask what kind of, we're doing damage right now that could basically affect the lives, even cost the lives of, it could certainly affect the lives of billions and cost the lives of tens of millions, depending on where this economy goes from here. And so right now, everyone's so focused on the potential, the media hysteria about coronavirus, which may be true, maybe not, which is why when I got your letter, I figured, okay, this is starting to make some sense. This is going along with the math that I've been seeing. So I agree. Let's you know, people need a calming voice also.
Yeah. So, I mean, during this podcast, James, and for everyone listening, I really want to give you some good news, some hope, some places that you can sort of get additional hope, and the realization that we've got the world's smartest people on the planet working on this. There's never been a time where the entire globe is more unified than right at this moment. I mean, that's kind of a kind of crazy outcome, but it is an important one. You know, we haven't seen this level of global unification. We didn't even have it on 9/11 because part of the world was gleeful about the attacks in the U.S. And bluntly, last time we had something like this was like the Apollo program 50-odd years ago when we landed on the moon and, you know, everyone around the world was focused on that. Now, that was a positive outcome versus a negative one. But still, you know, that's an important metric. There's more capital and more brain power. And I'll share some of the most amazing heroic science efforts going on right now. It's insane. Around the clock, people are working.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like in our lifetime, and in our lifetime, there are basically three events that have terrified me equally, but this is the worst. And the first was 9/11, and I actually had breakfast at the World Trade Center that day and saw the first plane as it was coming in. And that was not only obviously terrifying to me personally, but it was terrifying to the entire world. Everyone thought the world's going to change, and to some extent, the world did change. Same with the 2008-2009 financial crisis. That was terrifying and horrific and changed the world. But this now, you're right. This is affecting everybody. And a big difference with this is that we can't talk to each other. We can't go outside our houses mm-hmm. and meet each other. And so it has this weird isolating effect, but heightening the connectivity of the internet, the virtual connections between all people. And I wanted to go in a different order or down your list of,
sure.
of potential good news. So number two was China's new cases plummet. And I think this has been kind of ignored by the media, but let's talk about this.
So during any exponential growth curve, right? And I've been teaching exponentials to the mass public and to CEOs through my work at Abundance 360 and Singularity University. And an exponential is a simple doubling, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on, right? And here are the numbers people should memorize. You double something 10 times, it's 1,000 times better. You double it 20 times, it's 1,000,000 times. You double it 30 times, it's 1,000,000,000 times. So we talk about doubling rates of viral infections. You have this massive growth curve, but things don't continue doubling forever. For a number of reasons, they start falling off. And you see like an S curve, like the early days of it, you're pulling up like in a steep climb. And then at some point it starts leveling off and it levels off at the top and it makes sort of an S. And so China has entered the, if you would, you can imagine sort of a upward cup that's holding water part of the curve and then a downward cup that's dumping out water as you come over the top of the curve. And so China has entered the tail off of this exponential curve. It hit an inflection point.
As has South Korea.
And this happens typically for a number of reasons. One is man-made interference, which is social distancing and isolation and so forth. The second is herd immunity. And what herd immunity simply means is when enough people get infected and develop immunity, if I walked into a room of 10 people and I was infected, I don't think I am, just FYI, but if I walked in, I could infect 10 people. They go out, each infect 10 people, and that's, you know, you're seeing massive exponential growth. If, in fact, what happens is I walk into a room and of the 10 people in there, 8 have had it already, aren't immune, then they're sort of like the control rods in a nuclear reactor. They minimize, they don't get reinfected. their immune system is up and operational, only the other two people in the room. And so as we enter a population, more and more people have had it, the spread rate slows down substantially.
And there's a third factor too, which is that two other factors. One is the virus could start to mutate into a weaker strain, which we don't know whether or not that's happening here, but that's one possibility. And the other is that in the beginning of a pandemic, the people who perhaps get infected the easiest and display symptoms first are the weakest part of the population for that particular virus. And then once those people are recovered and the other demographics are stronger in terms of resisting the virus, that might lead to a sharp decrease in new cases as well.
It does. And we're also, at the same time, the world is not standing still. And people have to realize this, right? In the early days, when people didn't know what this was, before the virus was sequenced, before there was models of this, people were shooting in the dark. But there's been an extraordinary amount of science and capital and brain power applied to this. And we're beginning to get handholds on what existing drugs could be used. We'll talk about the numerous vaccines under development. And also people are now aware, and social distancing and self-quarantine is beginning to slow it down. So we can get ahead of this. And, you know, as bad as this pandemic is, and it's good that people are using the term pandemic, I actually call this a practice pandemic, because it could be a lot worse, right? You could imagine having these delayed periods of time between the time that you're infected and between the time that you show symptoms. And it could be that, like in Ebola or something, it has a much higher mortality rate, right? Like right now, a lot of people are reacting as if getting it is a death sentence. And the vast majority of people are either asymptomatic, mildly symptomatic, or recover.
So, Peter, let me ask you about that, because this has been a crucial thing since day one of this, to the point where it's like I even see in White House press conferences reporters saying, you know, given the fatality rate of 2.3%, blah, 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 how come these expert journalists and so on, how come they don't know basic math? Like, if we don't know how many people are asymptomatic, we don't know the true number of cases of the virus, you can't know then what the fatality rate is until it's in hindsight. So clearly it's not 2%, which is only the percentage of people in hospitals who had a fatality in the early days of the pandemic. And this is just basic math.
Yeah, so this is really important for people to hear. We don't actually know the fatality rate. We know how many people have died is easily to measure. Right now, globally, it's about, I'm looking at the stats, it's about 9,500 people have passed on because of this coronavirus. And the vast majority of those are people in their 70s and 80s with pre-existing conditions. And these are the same types of people who might normally die from the flu. They're frail, and we see vast numbers of people dying every year from the normal flu. So I just want to put that out there. What we then have is a stat that says 230,000 have been infected, and I'm on the site that is the worldometers.info coronavirus, and you just Google coronavirus deaths, and you'll see a site like this. And it's updated every day, right? It says 9,300 people have died, 86,000 people have recovered. But what we don't actually really know is how many people have been infected. We don't know the denominator, right? We know the number of people who have died in the top, that's concrete. We don't know the denominator, meaning we don't actually know if people are infected, because it may well be that that this is much more prevalent than we're seeing, right?
And given that we don't know, I've seen estimates up to 90% of cases might be asymptomatic, which lowers
by 10.
It lowers from
basically to flu levels, the fatality rate. And unfortunately, it's skewed towards one demographic, the elderly. But knowing data like this changes the way you treat it as a society, or change the way you treat it medically, and so on.
So I want to share with you an exciting piece of news that I'm beginning to share and blog and about, which is I'm on the board of a company. It's called C19. It's part of part of a larger company called United United Biomedical, and they have developed an antibody blood test, right? So this is not a nasal swab. This is a blood test that you take a small amount of blood and you find out, do you have antibodies to the coronavirus, right? Have you had it and have developed immunity to it? And what they are doing is they've gone, the co-founders, Lou Reese and Mei-Mei Hu, who live in Telluride, they've gone to the San Miguel County, which is the larger county that Telluride is part of, in Colorado. And they are going door to door and drawing blood and testing the entire county. They're testing 7,000 people to find out who is infected and who's not infected.
And it's a somewhat random population because Colorado hasn't had a lot of cases. Like, a lot of the testing that's been done so far to get evidence about this has been just on people with symptoms, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and so they're going to test, and then 10 days later, which is the sort of the typical 95% of people who are exposed will have seroconverted, meaning they will have created antibodies within 10 days. So they're going to do testing the next 3 or 4 days, and then testing 10 days later, and then be able to say, listen, you're free and clear, or you've had it and you have herd immunity and you're free and clear.
That's great.
And it's going to be the first, we'll actually get some data about this. And this is where we need to go to, and we're going to go to a point where everybody is tested and we have real information, because we're operating, you know, subpar. And like South Korea right now, you know, the stats I put out in another blog, and by the way, I put out a blog two or three times a week right now on the subject of the numbers. And anybody's interested, if you just go to diamandis.com, you can sign up for my blog there. So here are the numbers. China has seen a mortality rate of 3.9%, a death rate, let's call it that. And South Korea is 0.7%, right? And I think we'll see those numbers get lower as we realize more and more people were asymptomatic or subclinical. So we'll see. Now, the flu is 0.1%, right? Just for reference. So the likelihood it is better, it is worse than the flu, yes, but is it, you know, is it 10 times worse or 100 times worse? We'll find out. And the biggest problem, of course, is none of us have seen this virus before. So there's no vaccines out there. There's no previous immunity out there. And that's what's scaring people, is that it is highly infectious, meaning it lasts on surfaces of metal and wood and cardboard and plastic for, you know, dozens of hours, could be multiple days. And it is it's airborne in micro drops, meaning if you are just like cough or sneeze or, you know, breathing near somebody, you could be vaporizing the particulate. So it's not to be ignored. I just think the level of fear is off the charts.
Right. So it's a good point, because caution is different from panic.
Yes.
So for instance, for me, I'm staying indoors simply because I don't want to get this virus. I could stay indoors during flu season also, and I won't get the flu. But that's a choice I'm making, and people get the flu, and some people do stay indoors. So this is a similar type of choice. I think because of the uncertainty and because of everyone saying, oh my God, this is growing, this is doubling every day, and fatalities are 2%, people are going a little bit insane.
Yes.
But and then they ignore the flip side of the equation. Like China, after just a mere 3 months, after less than that. Starting around mid-February, cases started to peak. And now, as you mentioned in your email and has been kind of been passed around the internet, there's hardly any new cases. So they closed down the last of their specially built hospitals that were made just for coronavirus. People seem to be ignoring the fact that a pandemic does come to a natural ending. And in the middle of that is the peak where the number of cases per day stop moving up exponentially and start to actually level off or go down.
Yeah, and the challenge, and I think we all have to remember this, is that the news media, unfortunately, thrives on fear, right? If you think about it, and I'm just saying, just for everybody to get this realization, that the news media's job is to deliver your eyeballs to their advertisers. That's how they make their money. And when we are in a period of absolute fear and shock and awe during wartime, during pandemic time, during all these things, people are glued to the news. And so the ratings for news media go through the roof, and they can sell their advertising for a lot more. And so the good news networks don't succeed. And so it'd be great if they did, because what happens is all we hear is the negative information. We don't hear any of the positive news. And that just is, it just drives a continued exponential growth of fear.
But we evolve that way, right? So we, if someone 50,000 years ago passed by a bush and heard some rustling in the bush, they don't wait around to see if it's the wind or a lion. They just run.
Yeah. It's called our amygdala. We actually have a part structure in the brain called the amygdala. It's in the temporal lobe that scans everything we see and everything we hear for negative news. And it's our early warning system. And it puts us on red alert if we see something that's dangerous, visually, auditorily, sensorily. And we focus. And the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads. But there is good news. And maybe we'll just continue to share some of these things, shall we?
Yeah. But let me ask you this. Just one more thing about China. China's got 2 billion people. And I'm sure you encountered this because I've encountered this. If I mentioned to people, well, look, there was, you know, it's all horrible and tragic, but there were only, 3,000 or 4,000 reported deaths. Maybe they lied and maybe there's 20 times that amount. Who knows? But that's still a tiny percentage of 2 billion. And now it's over. And people seem to not want to believe that, even though it's kind of fact now. I mean, Apple even reopened all their stores, which is mentioned in your email.
Yeah. No, the number that I have reported here is about 3,200 deaths in China, which is significant, but a minuscule fraction of the number of people who died from the flu.
So again, like Harvard comes out with this report, 70% of the U.S. can get infected. There will be 10 million deaths. Why are people assuming this is going to be a thousand times worse than, or 3,000 times worse than China?
Yeah. I mean, I think they, first of all, China, because of the structure of their government, is able to say, shut everything down. And so they acted pretty fast, pretty quick. And the question is, will the U.S. or Europe act as decisively as quickly? Now, we should be and could be. And again, there's two different parts here. I think that this coronavirus is not going away. It's going to become part of the milieu of viruses. There are viruses in the environment that crop up every year, and we're going to have these viruses. And so there is a probability and a possibility that that you will eventually get it, but hopefully you get it after a vaccine is in place.
Right.
Or after herd immunity is there, after we know which drugs work better, right? Our simple goal is to slow things down enough to be able to, as everybody's been talking about, flatten out the curve, get enough, solve the shit out of this with science, which is the goal. And basically slow things down where it is treated and thought of like the flu eventually.
But what if we didn't? Now, obviously, social distancing works. If you keep yourself in your house and you don't meet people, you're not going to get any disease that's transmissible from human to human. But what do you think would happen in the U.S. if we just kind of did business as usual? Do you think it would be, 10 million deaths or?
I still don't think so. I think, you know, in fact, the numbers that I've seen that sound right are the potential for 1.5 million deaths. It's still a large number, right? We see 2.8 million deaths from all other causes of death in the United States. So 1.5 million is a significant number relative to that. But I think that those are worst case numbers. I really do. And I think we're going to be slowing it down and learning how to address it. The biggest fear right now and the biggest problem is definitively overwhelm of the medical system. That is the problem.
Which happened in Italy, which happened in Wuhan.
And will happen here. I mean, we will see it growing and growing across the country. And that is real and that is concerning. So, you know, the number of ventilators were right now, as you know, James, I serve as founder and executive chairman of the XPRIZE Foundation. My team is aggressively working on idea of a ventilator XPRIZE to get the maker community to come up with open source, simple to design and build ventilators.
And how's that going?
We're working on it 24/7. I hope we'll launch the competition next week. We're still looking for a funder for it. At the end of the day, we'll get this thing launched. And there are lots of open source efforts right now. We just want to supercharge it because I think, you should be able to build or even 3D print a ventilator to a large degree from low cost parts and create entrepreneurs around the world who are building ventilators, because the issue may not even be here. The issue may end up being in Africa and other parts of Asia that have nothing, right? And are going to still have these kinds of infection rates and requirement for ventilation.
And just to mention, you started the XPRIZE with, the first XPRIZE was, I believe, if I remember correctly, privately manufactured spaceflight as opposed to government funded, yeah. And the prize was, I believe, $10 million. And this turned out to be an enormously powerful way of incentivizing and by gamifying and providing financial incentive, this produces many results. You've done many XPRIZEs since with fantastic results.
Yeah, no, it was great. We've launched about $200 million in XPRIZE, another $200 million in development. Let me add one other thing on the news side. The challenge is all the negative news gets displayed and people don't get a chance to see the positive news. I actually, over the last 2 years, I've been building a machine learning platform, an AI platform, that actually goes and finds news out there in the world that is future forward, has positive elements, but looks at the convergence of exponential technologies, AI, robotics, 3D printing, AR, VR, synthetic genomics, and so forth, and how those technologies are transforming industries. And we just created a special version. The company is called FutureLoop, we just created a special version of FutureLoop, which is the coronavirus pandemic edition. And so what happens is every day, my machine learning algorithm goes out and scans thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of science journals, social media, news articles, looking for, in this version, news about coronavirus and pandemic. But then it filters it for which of these are solution-oriented news items, not dystopian news items, and which of these are around are using exponential technologies to do this. So it's amazing, and I just made this available for free to everybody. Can I share with you on Instagram?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So if you go to futureloop.com/C19, so FU. FutureLoop.com/C19 for COVID-19. You can sign up for free, and every day you will get a news blast of how is AI and data science being used to address this? How is robotics and drones and 3D printing being used to address this? How How is AR and VR changing where you work and where and how you play? It's basically it's a news feed of all of the positive news that is impacting the solution side of coronavirus. And I love it. I like, holy shit, I had no idea this was going on. This is amazing. And so, you know, it's a antidote to the negative news out there. So I hope people will subscribe to it. It's I built it because I wanted some alternate to the Crisis News Network, which I lovingly call CNN.
And just a brief 10 seconds. How does the AI work? Did you like train it with articles that were already good that you labeled good news?
I have an amazing person, Morgan McDermott, who is the CEO. I've just been funding it. And I put out something called Abundance Insider for the last 4 years.
A great newsletter, by the way.
Yeah. Again, dmandis.com. You can sign up for that. I have 4 years of articles of abundance-minded, exponentially focused news articles. And we trained up the AI to think like I do about what is scientifically valid, exponentially enabled, solution-oriented. And then there's a version of Future Loop that you can apply to any industry. Like if you're in the clothing industry, you can find out about future-oriented exponential impacts on the clothing industry or the education industry, whatever. But we create a special version of this.
I personally love feeling like I'm taking good care of myself. And I especially feel this when I take my daily dose of Athletic Greens. They really go above and beyond to help you take care of you, which is why I love taking Athletic Greens every single day. I do not miss a day. Athletic Greens is not your average supplement. First off, I love the taste. Second, it's a high-quality product taken by renowned experts, including myself. My friend Tim Ferriss is actually the one who introduced me to it years ago. I've seen Peter Diamandis' testimonial on the Athletic Greens website. So if you take it, you're in really great company. These are the experts. And it's great because they take a holistic approach, which is important to me. I don't want to put anything synthetic or bad for me in my body. I'm trying to constantly improve my diet, improve my health, improve my immune system. And Athletic Greens really has the same goal in mind for you. All the ingredients, and there's 75 in total, are highly absorbable and sourced from whole foods. And their research alone makes them a standout product for me. They've been a sponsor for well over a year. I love the product. I love how it tastes. They didn't just go to market and try to spring some random product on you. They spent 10 years with top nutritionists, naturopaths, and doctors to create their comprehensive formula. Athletic Greens really takes your nutrition seriously, which is something we all should do all the time. The formula is designed to help you adapt as your daily needs change due to stress, sleep patterns, or an imperfect diet. And these things are critically important for a good, well-functioning, healthy life. And if you're wondering what's in it, here's a sneak peek. You'll get super high-quality doses of zinc citrate, vitamin C, prebiotics, and probiotics, which is great because they provide effective immune system support and improve your gut health. It also has adaptogens and stress and hormone support. And we all know as stress goes up, it's important to be on our own team and get wellness where we can. This is so critical. Stress is just bad for you. So listen, because they're a direct sponsor, I'm able to work out a really good deal with them. I love this company. I love the product. It tastes great. Here's the deal. If you're a James Altucher Show listener, you get an extra 20 serving pack for free. That's a $79 value with your first purchase. Just do this. Go to the exact URL that I'm telling you. Just jump on over to athleticgreens.com/James and claim your special offer today. This is available in the US, Canada, UK, and EU. That's athleticgreens.com/James. And look, don't just go to athleticgreens.com because then you're missing out on the $79 value and you're not helping anybody. So just don't. I told my friends this. Go to athleticgreens.com/James. They just go to athleticgreens.com. And I'm like, are you guys idiots? Just do the smart thing. Every penny counts and be smart about it. So take your nutrition to the next level. Try Athletic Greens today. That's athleticgreens.com/James to get started. And I just want to say to Adam, who's the CEO of Athletic Greens, if you're listening now, thank you. This has been a huge support for the podcast, and I love the product. I love what you've been doing. And to my listeners, I also want to say thank you for listening, and thank you for showing up for our sponsors. You're the reason they keep coming back. And I really know this because we have if you're listening to this, I know you're a high quality listener of podcasts because we get such great feedback from everybody, from you guys to the sponsors to the companies we work with. I feel really proud of the podcast and the value we're bringing right now. Now, here's the show. And remember, the link to try it out is athleticgreens.com/James. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting
jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What about Vanity Future Loop? Like, I just want to put my own name in and just see only positive news about me.
Yeah. Well, you can. You can put your own name in there. But that's a version. If you can go to futureloop.com and it's in a private beta. We opened up the COVID-19 version to the public. If you go to futureloop.com alone and plug in your name, when we open it up, you can be invited to Future Loop. It's a way of changing how we consume news. And it's like, I want news that's actually going to be useful to me, not what some editor on a newspaper staff or not what some producer on a TV channel wants to feed me.
No, I don't know if I ever told you this, but one time I was on a news show pretty regularly and as one of the pundits or whatever, and the producer asked me for one show, hey, why don't you hang out backstage with us and you'll see how this is done. And in the middle of the show, he leaned over to me and he said, we're just trying to fill up the space between ad spots. That's our entire job. And that's him admitting it at a prime time. It was a prime time news show at a major network, which was kind of scary. I stopped going on news shows after that.
So listen, but, I mean, that's their business. It's like, you know, if you look at the headlines across the bottom of Fox or CNN, it's like death toll rises. It's like pandemic alerts. It's like, it's meant
to get their fancy graphics.
Oh my God. It's meant to screw with your brain.
Yeah. So, okay, so positive news. Let's talk about vaccine development because I have some questions. You mentioned Moderna. This has been in the news, has been developing an experimental vaccine. There's other companies developing vaccines. Realistically, coronavirus, you know, the common cold is a coronavirus. There's no vaccine for the common cold. There's no cure for the common cold. Realistically, is this possible to come up with a vaccine for this COVID-19?
Yes. I am absolutely clear it is, and there's a multitude of efforts underway. And what's also true is that it's going to mutate, and you're going to create additional versions of this.
So it'll be like the flu vaccine where you have to take it every year.
It'll be like the flu vaccine. So Moderna, Stefan Bansal, who's the CEO of Moderna, is a friend, and I happened to be in his headquarters in Cambridge 2 weeks ago before the insanity fully began, and sat down with him and his chief scientist. Tony Robbins and I are writing a book called Life Force about all of the incredible technologies coming online this decade to extend the healthy human lifespan, right? It's, again, at a time we're talking about mortality rates and death rates and so forth, it's nice to think about the fact that there's amazing technology. It's going to extend our life. So Stefan said, listen, we've got we're working on this. The challenge is going to be how quickly the FDA will approve this, right? At the end of the day, we may have a vaccine that we think is ready to go, but the FDA's job is to not have a treatment be worse than what you're treating. So if you put out a vaccine that you think is fine And all of a sudden we find out, oh no, it's not, in pregnant women or children or whatever. That's what they want to protect about. They want to have enough data to show that it is safe. So the chances are that we're likely to have a vaccine in the fall of 2021, that it may take as long as another 18 months to go through all of the testing. But it's also potential that we're going to see vaccines tested earlier in other countries. So in Israel, in China, in Taiwan, in other places. This company I mentioned earlier, United Biomedical, has a vaccine as well. They are the largest vaccinator of pigs in the world, based in China and Taiwan. They vaccinated 5 billion pigs from hoof and mouth disease, which is much more virulent, much more infectious, and kills pigs and mutates very rapidly. And so they have a platform for creating vaccines, and they have a vaccine that is in animal testing and hopefully will be in humans in the next within the next month. But in addition, their platform is a platform play for vaccines, and it has been their platform has been used in humans before, and we know is safe. So I think we're going to have a lot of good news on the vaccine front sooner than 18 months from now. But I think people are beginning to want to be cautious about what they promise.
Sure. And Peter, let me ask you this. The FDA is a gatekeeper between the biotech companies and, you know, getting this out to the population. And for good reason. You point out for safety, and there's, you know, like you say, 18 months. Often these safety trials are 12 months, and then there's other things they need to pass as well, which is the other 6 months, even in a very fast track case. But what about in some cases, like letting, do you think this will affect policy? Like, why not let the most susceptible part of the population, the elderly, choose if this passes some kind of safety metric? If I'm an 80-year-old person, I'll take the vaccine.
I completely agree. At the end of the day, I think that we need the ability for people to be a lot more experimental with themselves if they want. What happens is if, in the finance world, you can only go public after all the lawyers have proofread everything and it's safe for grandmothers and kids to invest in your company in a public setting. But then there's something called an accredited investor, right? And you can do a Reg D offering and have an accredited investor where if you've got over $1 million of net worth and you have income of over $200,000, you can invest whatever you want. You know, you're intelligent enough. So there should be a accredited patient version of that, where if you're smart, if your family members have signed off, if your doctor has signed off, you can try risky things. That should exist.
By the way, accredited investors do not have a better track record than non-accredited investors. That's kind of like it was only accredited investors investing in Bernie Madoff. So it's sort of a weird analogy, but I agree almost disease by disease. Like again, here with COVID-19, this coronavirus, it affects mostly the elderly, or it hurts mostly the elderly. There's no pregnant women over the age of 80. They should be allowed to take this vaccination as opposed to staying in next season for the whole season. So I'm just suggesting there may be another piece of good news that could come out of this is that we pick and choose our spots to start releasing some of these things early, including drugs. So what are you seeing on the cure front?
So there are a number of drugs that are antivirals and malaria drugs that are in tests. So what's happening right now is two things. One, lots of existing drugs that are in production already and have been FDA approved and could be used off-label are in test. And we're going to find out the results. We'll find out these results in the next probably week or two. And then if there's things of promise, Gilead has some, they will be, at the speed of light, that information will go to every physician and every hospital out there, and we'll start utilizing these things. There are other things, for example, one of my other companies I'm a co-founder of called Cellularity, based in New Jersey, is the largest cellular medicine company. And they actually store placentas. When a baby is born, you have traditionally stored the cord blood for that child, which can repopulate your hematopoietic system if you have a childhood leukemia of some type. But what they realized, what Dr. Bob Hurry, who is the chairman, CEO, the brains behind the operation, I'm simply his co-founder and vice chairman, realizes that the placenta is a 3D printer that manufactures the baby and also the immune system that protects the baby. And so what he's done is stored 100,000 plus placentas, decellularized them, been able to take out the stem cells, the pluripotent stem cells, and also the T cells and natural killer cells in the placenta. And those natural killer cells in our tests right now, natural killer cells are what the cells that protect you against viral infection and against various cancers, as well as the T cells. And what he's finding is that natural killer cells infused into a patient who is infected could help them fight the infection, right? So it's like boosting your immunity. So that's important. It's still preclinical. They just filed for an emergency IND, and basically to get approval from the government to start testing, and hopefully we'll get that approval this week or next.
And now, is that to work on people who have the illness?
Yes.
So again, like I always ask, like let's say there's some indications that this works, and you have 100,000 people on ventilators right now that are not looking so good. Why do we need any tests? Why not we just give it to them if there's some indications?
I agree. So Cellularity's facilities, we just built out brand new facilities where we could manufacture hundreds of thousands of doses of natural killer cells for infusion. You infuse some large number of cells in through an IV, and that's the goal. This is the FDA process. It is a slow and methodical
and expensive
process, because here it's political to a large degree in the following way. If the FDA approved, and this is not the company's point of view, it's my personal point of view, I just want to be clear about that. I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. But the FDA is there to protect people against charlatans, to protect people against unknown effects. And there have been lots of cases in the past where people thought something was safe, but it turned out to actually like thalidomide.
Thalidomide, whatever.
Yes, yeah, that was given to people as an anti-nausea drug in the early 60s. It turned out to, in pregnancy, cause shortened forearms. It was awful, but it's now found to be used in multiple myeloma, and Celgene developed that into a multi-billion-dollar drug, but under these unique conditions. Having said that, if you approve a drug and someone gets hurt, there's hell to pay. If you don't approve a drug out of caution, then we're just being safe, right? So you value the lives lost from approval more than the lives lost from not approval. It's a strange, perverse situation.
And it's interesting because you look at our philosophy, let's say in a time of war. Okay, let's say something happens that triggers us to go to war. What's the first thing we do? We call up every 18-year-old male in the country, and now female. We call up every 18-year-old in the country and say, we're going to give you a gun, and we're going to send you to a foreign country that you're unfamiliar with, and you're going to shoot other 18-year-olds. We have no problem making a decision like that. But, oh no, don't give this cure of a fatal disease to anybody yet. Like, we're so, nervous about some things, and then just eager to send citizens off to their death in other cases. It always strikes me as amazing.
Well, we are at a war. We're at a global war. I'd love to call this World War III, but against a virus.
Right. The only reason I don't like, for this case, using military terminology is I see, like in London, they just can't delay the mayoral elections. I do get afraid of a terminology that's going to lead to something authoritarian over
yes.
in a situation that doesn't deserve it at all.
Yeah, no, agreed. So let's so, you know, future loop / C19 will give you good news every day on all of the efforts around the world for testing, for massive data science and AI being applied to this, to cures, to vaccines, yeah.
As a cure, what do you think of chloroquine, the anti-malaria drug?
Yeah, so again, there's some data to show that it's got potentially positive effects, and people are scrambling and trying to get supplies of it already. So listen, when you've got no solution, you throw everything at it. So I'm reading the same reports everybody else is. Maybe I'm reading some other reports as well. I just got a report in out of China that came out yesterday of their latest. And let me just read some of this. So the virus is the coronavirus 2 is sensitive to ultraviolet and heat. So in, how do you kill it? It's ultraviolet light and heat. 75% ethanol kills it. Chlorine-containing disinfectants kill it.
Well, what does that mean? Does that mean how do you kill it when it's in the body? With
no,
the
no, on surfaces, on surfaces.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see what else. The pathology in the lungs very much resembles SARS and MERS. And it's basically, you know, just damaging the alveolar, the alveoli of the lungs. It decreases the number of lymphocytes and it decreases cell regeneration. So that's, you know, it's causing your lungs to begin to fail. Let's see if I can find some other data here about other treatments in this recent deck. If you want to keep talking while I thumb through, it just came over.
Yeah. So you, in one of your points, you mentioned 7 treatments who were treated in India have recovered, and you referred to that the treatment protocol will be scaled to other hospitals. What was the treatment protocol that they used to?
I don't have it in front of me. I mean, here's what's going on. The beautiful thing is that humans are pretty much the same globally, and we're seeing a massive parallel processed experiment going on. So every country is throwing everything it's got at it and is open sourcing all the information that is there. So it isn't like if it was just in, you know, just in New York and only New York hospitals were doing it. It's every hospital around the world is trying whatever they can. So that for me, that gives tremendous hope. So there's 2 antivirals, lopinavir and ritonavir, that are being tried together, and so it's going to be reported on in the next couple of days. Let's see what else here. But please go on.
So what I've been getting out of all this is that there is a beginning, middle, and end to a pandemic, just like there was for SARS, MERS, H1N1. And people sort of think that, I see people commenting like, what good is quarantining if this just keeps doubling forever? We'll never be able to leave our house. The reality is there's a timeline for when a pandemic, any pandemic, wears itself out.
Exactly. So what happens is either you have it and you build immunity and your immune system kills it off inside your body, or you didn't get it, but the number of virally infected people have gone to near zero. Everybody who is infected has developed an immunity or has died. That's it. I mean, those are the 2 outcomes.
Right. This happens every season with the flu. It comes,
yeah.
It does its thing, which is horrible, and then it's over.
Yeah.
And so people don't sort of understand that. I think that's an important piece of good news. And we see, and the evidence we see is in China, which you could argue as a train wreck as a country in terms of medical care and in terms of many social systems. And after 3,000 deaths, it basically, the disease died off to the point where they're shutting down the hospitals that they built. They Apple's opening up in all those all their stores. Factories are reopening. There was an actual end, and it wasn't a percentage of 2 billion people. It was a tiny percentage of a percentage of a percentage that ended up getting.
Now what we're seeing is this experiment, this global experiment. I hate to call it that, but in phases, where we're seeing what happened in China and South Korea, and then Italy. And then the U.S., right? Sort of those are the benchmarks I'm thinking. And China is 3 months ahead of everybody, and Italy's a month ahead of us. And so when China reopens, which it will do shortly, and people start coming out of quarantine, that's the next card we're going to flip over and say, does it, like you can think about it as a fire. Like, if there are a few glowing embers still in the fire, does it begin to reemerge again?
Right. And so, so I think most of China is reopened, but in Wuhan specifically, it's within the next 2 weeks, they're basically unlocking the main area affected, which is good news, which they're confident in doing. If they weren't confident in doing it, I doubt they would do it because they don't want to be embarrassed.
Yeah.
But we'll see, like you say, but again, the data suggests this has a timeline of roughly 3 to 4 months in every country.
Yes.
And the same thing will happen here, which if you count conservatively, if you count March 1st as the beginning of the first cluster, the first 100 cases, that would suggest June 1st as the end date and April 15th, roughly, give or take a few days as a peak point where you start to see cases level off and then even decline, as you were mentioning, like that S.
Yep, exactly. And so I want to give people hope. The question is, how long are you going to be sort of held up with your mother-in-law is the question, or with screaming kids and such. And so one of the things to also think about on this positive news conversation is, what do you do in this time of pause, right? So we're taking like a nationwide pause from work, which is destroying the economy. And my heart goes out to, millions of people who are losing their jobs, and probably tens of thousands of businesses are going out of business, which is a real travesty. Massive travesty. And so if you're lucky enough not to have to close down your business, or if you have income and not losing your job, and you have a potential to think, what do you do during this time? Because this, with this pause comes opportunity. And a couple of things I shared with my community are the following, if I could go ahead and share this.
Sure.
Yeah. So number one, this is a time of reconnecting with family, obviously. Right. So I've been out playing baseball with my boys a lot more than, they're 8.5 years old, and we're having fun over that. And so spending time with your family, more time with your family, and really connecting with your family and having more intimate and meaningful and deeper conversations than you might normally have as you're running around your business is one thing. The second thing is your health. And this comes in two parts, exercising and meditation. So we can talk about next, one of the important things to do is maximize your immunity, right? We're finding that older people die and younger people don't, or don't have symptoms. Why? Because younger people have stronger immunity than older people. And so you want to maximize your immunity, and immunity comes from sleep, exercise, being non-stressed, diet. We can talk about all the things that boost your immunity. So during this time, the second area is take care of yourself. Sleep 8 hours, get exercise, eat healthy foods. Those are important things. Learn to meditate and meditate. So taking care of yourself. The next thing is, if you're an entrepreneur like I am, now is a great time and an excuse to kill that part of your business that you were always wondering, man, I'm dragging this along. Should I kill it? Shouldn't I kill it? Whatever. Now is a chance to restructure your business. There's going to be a damn good excuse for it. But at the end, if products aren't working, I think, it's a chance to refocus what you're doing. The fourth category for me is go digital. I talk about this in Abundance and Bold and the Future is Faster, is the 6 D's, that whatever is digitized enters a period of slow deceptive growth, and then it becomes disruptive and it dematerializes, demonetizes, and democratizes products and services. So how do we digitize as much of what we do? And so that we can provide digital, you know, obviously this podcast is a digital version of what would have been physical things in magazines and newspapers and such in the past.
And even radio shows. We don't have to go to a radio station. We don't have to go to a TV station to do this.
Yeah, exactly. And so last night, for example, I participated in a global event that took place in China with my VR headset. I was a keynote speaker on a stage in China with, I just get the stats.
Just out of curiosity, did you get sick? Like I've given a talk in a VR world for about 45 minutes and I felt a little nauseous afterwards. It's like that uncanny valley of VR where your brain sort of freaks out after a little while. Hey, this is not the real world. And I thought it was, and it kind of triggers this nausea.
No, the technology is getting so much better. This was put on by a friend of mine, the president of HTC China, Alvin Graylin. And so there was 30,000 people participating.
Wow.
In the event. And I was talking about the future of education and digitized. And so, you know, we're going to see a lot more digital education going. And right now, 200 million kids in China have been out of school and they're all going digital.
So Peter, let me ask about this because obviously millions of kids in the U.S. now are out of school, including all five of mine. And because of this situation, is this going to kind of trigger more the discussion of, hey, online education is a legit alternative to spending $70,000 a year on a higher education where you're going to go into massive debt?
Yeah, I think we need to reinvent education. Education is no longer for college, for example, in graduate school, you know, a first university started around 1000 AD and they really started getting going 500 years ago in Europe, a lot of them around the church and such. But when universities really got underway in the 1800s, early 1900s, you would go to school, get your degree by age 22. And for the average male, your life expectancy was like 40. And so your education would last you, you know, 20 years. And during that time, things didn't change very much. And now things are changing constantly. So we need to rethink education. It's not going to be a one and done, like, oh, I went to school, I got my degree. Bullshit. It's going to be a continuous, it's a subscription model. I'm going to go to MIT and I'm taking courses the rest of my life in AR, in augmented reality, and virtual reality.
I love the idea of making it a subscription model. That kind of buffers the fall of these sort of physical colleges, while at the same time not ignoring, you know, places like Coursera, Khan Academy, LinkedIn Learning that have such masterclass, that have such valuable courses.
Amazing.
That are being ignored because they're not quote unquote accredited, so kids feel they're not getting the full experience, which is just BS.
Yeah, and let's be clear, you know, college has multiple reasons. One is to learn a topic or subject, which is the least needed. You know, you don't need physical facilities to do that. You can actually learn better in VR. And that's, the data is very clear. You can learn subjects much better in VR than you can sitting in a classroom with a sage on the stage. But college also has the importance of independence, right? You leave home, you screw up on your own, you have issues, you learn all of these things. So there's learning how to learn, and there's making friends, and there's the social side and becoming a good human. So we need to differentiate what we have to do in physical proximity and what we can do digitally.
So, you know, final thing I want to ask, I mean, we've talked about how social distancing is demonstrated to shorten the time span, or at least decrease the mortality rate in places like China, South Korea, and so on. Hopefully, in the U.S., pandemics have a beginning and end. Vaccines, we're working together as a globe, and vaccines are being developed, and hopefully, they'll get out there as quickly as possible. Possible cures are being released. And again, hopefully they'll get out there as quickly as possible. And all the evidence suggests there's going to be an end to this and it's not going to be as bad as people think. But right now, people are under the... people don't know whether this is going to last forever and infect the entire globe. And people also don't know what the effects of all this social distancing and social isolation will be, not only on individuals and their mental health, but on the economy. Businesses up and down the chain are going to go out of business in just a month. If there's a month of the entire world being locked down, essentially most restaurants, bars, retail stores, and many other businesses that depend on supply chain management are just going to die. Yep. Do you think what's on the other side of this, optimistically, in your view? What have you been thinking about?
Wow. That is the part that breaks my heart the most, is the impact on people's livelihoods. So we're going to reinvent a lot. I think, first of all, the most important thing is for us not to ignore what is happening and the price that we're paying, and to become more robust as a society, right? The ideas of pandemics have been out there for a while, and people have been talking about it. You know, one of the things that I'm concerned about is that we do have existential threats for humanity that we don't pay attention to. In fact, this year for XPRIZE, our theme is addressing humanity's existential threats. We picked that theme before the pandemic, right? Pandemic is one existential threat. An asteroid impact is another. You know, talking about having a bad day, right? If we find a large enough asteroid heading our way and they pass really close to the Earth all the time, doesn't have to be a planet killer. An asteroid that, you know, lands off the Atlantic seaboard could cause massive damage, or, you know, it just could ruin the entire global economy even worse than we have right now. So we have to be spending more of our time intelligently protecting ourselves against all of these things. The environmental, you know, crisis is another one that we are not paying anywhere near enough attention to. So I think that we're going to have to upskill people who lost their jobs to digital jobs. I think, you know, a lot of the stuff I talk about in my book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, is fundamentally going to be accelerated by this virus. We're going to accelerate a lot of these things digitally and autonomously and automatically.
I think also, I don't know if it'll occur now or in the next crisis, but I think public policy has to change, has to be a little bit more open, a little bit more fluid and situation and context-based, as opposed to like, these are the FDA rules, these are the rules for lockdown. Like, you know, you take a situation like this that everyone is so worried about, but as we get more data, it suggests more policy. So, okay, here's a demographic group that is the most affected by this. This is the group that should probably be more under lockdown than the group that moves the economy forward. Okay, here's a drug, here's a vaccine that maybe we can send to people who are on life support now, even though it's not fully through the FDA. It got through phase one or phase two.
100%. We also need more scientists and more engineers in Congress, right? I mean, we have a political system filled with lawyers to the most degree. And I really think, you know, one of the things that China has is they have a meritocracy with a lot, you know, the number of PhDs in the Chinese government. And, you know, listen, I'm a capitalist, you know, through and through, and I love our country, but I don't like the fact that, you know, we're not listening to our scientists, and we are not moving fast enough, and our most of our politicians don't have enough of a scientific background, I think, to a large degree, to be making the decisions there.
So do you think we will get to the other side of this in the sense
of course
that, in the sense that people now, is there a tipping point where people get into such hysteria over these restrictions and the restrictions continue longer than they need to? Is there a tipping point where society is not just dented, but brutalized?
I hope not. I mean, I think the decisions we make for the United States, at least as a country, this week, and how, you know, the Small Business Administration, and how we cushion this, and how then we restart the economy rapidly there on the flip side of this. All of these things are super important.
I agree. And I think, look, they've announced trillions and trillions of dollars of stimulus, probably triple what they announced for the financial crisis. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. There hasn't been enough stimulus, I think, on the small business level, but there's probably ideas being discussed that we're not aware of.
One last thing I want to add here is there's not enough money going into science. There's nowhere near enough money going into the labs and the scientists who have been wanting to do this, right? After the SARS outbreak, a lot of the science, a lot of the budgets that were going to be working on vaccines and on all that just shut down, right?
In part because to get a drug through the FDA requires about $2 billion from a company. And most
and a decade of time, yeah.
Right, and most, you know, let's say a professor comes up with something in the laboratory and now moves it over to a small company, gets a little bit of funding to get started and show some decent results. Now, where is he going to get $2 billion more dollars? Yeah, it's very difficult.
It is tough. So the FDA needs to become a lot more agile, and we need a lot more capital flowing to entrepreneurs in this arena. We need, the same way that Silicon Valley took a very old industrial industry, we need to move rapidly to a much more agile entrepreneurial pharmaceutical industry. We can. AI is going to be a critical, play a critical role there, but it's an exciting time. I just hope we learn the lessons out of this.
So, Peter, one final question. What supplements or things are you taking right now for specifically coronavirus?
Immunity. Yeah, so basically I'm working on my immunity. So I am, I can read it to you. It's over here. So I'm taking zinc. I'm taking obviously all my, you know, high dose of vitamin C. I'm taking glutathione. I'm taking a couple of different products that are immune boosters.
Like what? What are those products?
Well, here, let me just extend over here.
And it's understood you're not recommending them. These are just what you're taking.
These are a lot of over-the-counter products.
I'll say, like, I'm taking lactoferrin, for instance, which is an immune booster.
Yeah. So I'm putting out a blog tomorrow, this weekend, about boosting your immunity, which has all the details. But colostrum, which is the first milk coming out of, you know, cows that have immunoglobulins in them, phosphatidylserine, taking zinc, immune renew has got don't have my glasses on to even read it, but it's, if people go and get my blog, this will be I'll be finishing this tonight. I'll have a detailed list of all of the things that are natural immune boosters and foods and so forth.
Well, finally, Peter, thanks so much for coming on. I think good news is sorely needed in this environment when, as you mentioned, the newspapers tend to focus on the opposite for better or for worse. But I think people are in such despair right now that this is really helping people to realize that this is going to come to an end and that there's some positive things going on right now. And I also want to recommend, I've been following your newsletter probably since you began it. It's, you know, again, you not only do you highlight these great news things that are happening in these exponentially growing industries, but you also append your own opinion about why each thing is important. That's how I saw your positive news on coronavirus, was through your newsletter. Once again, you get that. Peter, how do you get your different newsletters?
So if you go to dmandis.com, you can subscribe on that page for my, I put out a blog every week. I also go to futureloop.com/C19, which is really the most relevant right now for folks.
And I would put on any reading list for people who have time to spare and want to learn about these, what the future looks like, abundance, bold, And your latest book, The Future is Faster Than You Think.
Yes.
So once again, Peter, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you, buddy. A pleasure as always. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.